This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Reproductive rights advocates have not been used to scoring victories for a very long time. That's why Monday's Supreme Court decision to void one of the most restrictive anti-abortion laws in the nation in Texas came as such a surprise. The court, in a 5-3 vote, with Justice Anthony Kennedy as a swing vote, struck down Texas's onerous requirement for doctors performing abortions at clinics to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals. Nearby, in this context, meant within 30 miles. The cleverly written state law was cast as one that was meant to protect women, but that effectively shuttered a majority of the state's abortion providers. The repercussions of this ruling are very significant. Within just a day, three other states with similar laws were struck down in Alabama, Mississippi, and Wisconsin. The ruling is considered the most important to emanate from the Supreme Court on the issue of abortion rights in a quarter of a century. My guest is Rupali Sharma. She's a legal fellow at the Center for Reproductive Rights. Welcome to the program, Rupali.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, let's begin by first explaining what the role was that your organization, Center for Reproductive Rights, played in this whole case.
Sure. So the Center for Reproductive Rights, we are the lawyers representing the plaintiffs. So we litigated this case from the very beginning, beginning in trial court, when we got both of the restrictions, the admitting privileges requirement, but also the ASC requirement struck down completely. Unfortunately, the Fifth Circuit reversed that decision, but we were confident that the Supreme Court would ultimately vindicate the district court and strike both of the provisions down, affirming what they said in 1992, which is that women have a fundamental right to end their pregnancy and deserve compassion, respect, and integrity in accessing healthcare.
So you were representing Whole Woman's Health, which is a clinic in Texas, right?
Yeah, so Whole Woman's Health actually has several clinics throughout the country and have been providing care to women in underserved communities for many, many years. That's why it was so surprising when, you know, their doctors were unable to get admitting privileges and they were unable to stay open, because women rely on them and they just have such a fantastic reputation, both medically and also such a great history of really caring for women and their families.
Hmm. Well, what impact had the Texas law had on abortion clinics? I mean, even though what happened at the Supreme Court is a huge victory, I understand that it might have come too late for many clinics, right?
No, that's an excellent point. The impact of the restrictions taken together was absolutely devastating. If the Supreme Court hadn't stepped in and done its job, over 75% of the clinics would have closed. Now, thankfully, we won in court. And so that means that the existing clinics in Texas, which are approximately 19 now, can remain open, which is great. And also, some of the former clinics can reopen and new clinics can come in. But as you suggested, we have clinics that will never open again. We have lost those clinics forever. And so that is just to say that, you know, it's a wonderful victory that the Supreme Court, again, affirmed a woman's constitutional right to end a pregnancy, but we can't just rely on the courts. We also have to push state legislature not to pass pretextual laws like this, and in fact, to pass laws that protect women's access to safe and legal abortion. We also can look to Congress to pass similar laws. And so, you know, we can't just rely on the courts. Each branch of government has a duty to uphold the Constitution and make sure women's rights and their health are protected.
Right. Now, 19 clinics in a state as large as Texas is pretty remarkable, that you know, somebody would probably still even now have to travel many, many miles. And if a woman, you know, to get an abortion, and if a woman is in a difficult position or doesn't have enough money already, we see very, very strong restrictions. Now, what's interesting about this law that Texas passed, of course, was that there have been many copycat laws around the country. Can you give us a sense of how other states have also been attempting to restrict abortion access by using this term admitting privileges, that doctors who perform abortions have to have admitting privileges to nearby hospitals?
Yes, absolutely. As you mentioned, we've seen an unprecedented number of laws, and many of them have been admitting privileges requirements. Thankfully, this decision sends a very clear message to state legislatures and lower courts that politicians can't inject their personal beliefs into women's healthcare decisions. As you mentioned before, we have already seen a change in Alabama. The Alabama AG will not be appealing the trial court decision, which very much, just as the Supreme Court did yesterday, recognized that the admitting privileges requirement didn't promote any health benefits and only harmed women. And so they will not be appealing that decision, which means that the win in Alabama stands and that requirement will remain struck down. Also, this morning, the court declined to take a case in Wisconsin involving an admitting privileges requirement and affirmed our win by not taking a case in Mississippi. Mississippi and Wisconsin also involved an admitting privileges requirement, which again is to say that those states will remain free of the admitting privileges requirement, and we can begin, you know, which is what is the admittedly hard work of restoring access to abortion in those places. We can also use this decision, even though it deals with only the admitting privileges requirement and the AC requirement, to begin to challenge laws that, you know, similarly, regardless of what they are, only serve to harm women's health, not to promote it, and really impinge on the constitutional right to abortion.
Now, Rupali, I understand that there was also another aspect to this case that the Supreme Court ruled on, but one that Texas hadn't begun to properly enact yet, and that is essentially requiring abortions to be done in ambulatory surgery centers. Can you explain that?
Yes, exactly. So the requirement, this is the ASC requirement I was referring to earlier, right, essentially required abortion clinics, again, some of which have been operating since Roe with just remarkable safety records, to comply with the criteria for ambulatory surgery centers, which are really just mini hospitals, right? Mm. So I think maybe the clearest illustration of this, of how just arbitrary the regulations were, as the Supreme Court recognized yesterday, is that the ASC regulation required women who obtained a medication abortion, which really just involves swallowing a series of pills, to take that pill in a multi-million dollar facility, right? So there's no connection between taking a pill and having, you know, a certain structure that, you know, abortion clinics couldn't afford and really put them out of business. And so, you know, it's certainly why the court struck down that requirement so clearly yesterday.
Hmm. And in general, barring complications, abortions are essentially, most abortions are essentially simple procedures that do not require hospitalization, right?
Oh, absolutely. They are one of the most safest procedures. And, you know, the court, because the decision had so much to do with medical evidence and taking medical evidence seriously, really credited the opinions of leading medical organizations and experts like ACOG and AMA as to just how safe abortion is. It's, in fact, 14 times more safe than childbirth. And so the court really recognized that. And it, you know, it just, it was one other reason that it was so clear that these sham laws were really just meant to shut down abortion clinics and not to promote women's health.
Right. And so it's the framework that abortion opponents were simply interested in the health of women and therefore were putting these requirements into place. That framework seems to have really been struck down by the courts. Now, you've been talking about abortion as a constitutional right, and I don't think enough Americans understand it to be such. Can you just remind us why women's access to abortion is constitutionally guaranteed?
Oh, absolutely. So the case that we were relying on and that the court relied on yesterday was Planned Parenthood v. Casey, which came down in 1992. Not only does it guarantee a woman a right to a pre-viable abortion, but it talks about why that right is so important, right? So that right is recognized under the U.S. Constitution because it ensures a woman's liberty, her bodily integrity, her equality, and her autonomy. So not only do laws that prevent abortion, not only are they unconstitutional, but if you're degraded in the process of getting an abortion because, you know, you have to sleep in your car because you have to travel a certain number of miles, or you're pushed into later into your pregnancy and incur medical risks, those laws are unconstitutional too, because they're not furthering the interests behind the abortion right. So I think what would be helpful for Americans to realize, it's not just getting an abortion at the end of the day. It's getting it in a dignified, safe, legal, and affordable manner. And that's really what we're fighting for here at the Center for Reproductive Rights.
So what other repercussions legally can this ruling have? You mentioned the three states where immediately within, you know, a couple of days, the attempts to have this admitting privileges aspect come through was voided. Are we hopefully going to see other states and other abortion restrictions as a result of this ruling be overturned?
So, nothing happens automatically. I mean, clearly, those other restrictions are either currently being litigated or would have to be challenged. What I will say is that this decision was sweeping. It's not limited to admitting privileges. It's not limited to an ASC requirement. It's not even limited to laws like those two laws, which we call targeted regulation of abortion providers, TRAP laws. It really applies to any restriction that doesn't serve a valid state purpose, doesn't promote medical health, but burdens women, imposes severe obstacles to their to abortion care and to access to abortion care. So really, in that sense, it's very broad, and it's a very powerful tool that we can use to challenge restrictions that fall into that bucket, which are, many of them.
Right. And also, what do you think this ruling can have an impact, or can this ruling have an impact symbolically to just kind of counter the huge trend of anti-abortion laws in this country? I mean, I mentioned that victories for abortion rights are rare these days, this being, an exception to the rule. And we've just seen hundreds and hundreds of anti-abortion laws at the state level in particular pass one after the other. Can this give the opponents of abortion rights pause?
I think it sends a very clear message that pretextual laws, courts will not stand for them, right? I mean, again, if you can't demonstrate that the restriction was passed for a valid reason and it's burdening women, it will fall. That said, the fight is certainly not over. We do expect to see different types of restrictions, and, I'm sure that, we will be litigating for years. But that said, this gives us a very powerful tool to dismantle medically unnecessary laws and other laws that don't promote a state purpose. I don't think that the anti-abortion, anti-choice forces are going to, just surrender. But it would very much not be in their interest to keep passing these sort of laws.
Right.
They will lose.
And is their ultimate goal, of course, to overturn Roe, right? Rather than, even going to, that is the sort of the big prize that they are all aiming at?
I'm glad you bring that up. I'm sure that's their ultimate goal. But I think that, in the interim, what they're doing really is punishing women for exercising their constitutional rights. Right. When we exercise other constitutional rights, we don't have to pay a penalty. But that's what they're doing with these laws. Even the fortunate women who have resources who can get the abortion at the end of the day, they still have to go through hell to do it. And that's not constitutional. So I think that's an important component of it.
Right.
I think what this decision did was it made clear that any fundamental right, including abortion, including rights enjoyed by women, has to be true in fact and not only in theory.
Right. So that's a really important aspect, and that's this whole admitting privileges issue. Now, in the case, I understand a tremendous amount of material was submitted to make the case that women have been harmed. Is there evidence of the number of at-home abortions, botched abortions, increasing as a result of the laws such as the one that Texas has in place?
Yes, absolutely. Those numbers are huge. And I would add that, understandably enough, we can never know the full extent of women who, again, the most vulnerable women who are forced to carry to term or to take matters into their own hands, right? I mean, these are not women who are going to go to the authorities or, share their story in a newspaper. And so as huge as the numbers are, I would say that they're underreported, and that's what's really heartbreaking.
Well, finally, can you give out a website where people can find out more information, and also where people can actually start to think about rebuilding some of these clinics? I mean, is there someone who is, or are there organizations that are accepting donations to reopen some of the shuttered clinics in Texas and other parts of the country? I mean, it's a shame that a state as large as Texas has 19 clinics. And as we mentioned earlier, the damage that this law wrought before the Supreme Court stepped in, is some of it is irreparable.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, Texas has 5.4 million women of reproductive age and currently 19 clinics. And we are doing everything we can to help restore access. But you're right, you know, it is a crisis situation. You know, people should feel free to visit our website, reproductiverights.org. They can also contact the National Abortion Federation, which works with different funds, which, you know, can't open clinics and can't even pay for all of women's procedures, but they do try to provide help to women who are in the greatest of need, right? Women who literally are, you know, one train ticket or, you know, one, like, childcare appointment away from not being able to get the care that they need. So I would really encourage people to view those as good resources.
And so the website is reprorights.org.
Reproductiverights.org.
Reproductiverights.org. Okay, we will post that to our website later today. Rupali, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you so much.
Rupali Sharma is a legal fellow at the Center for Reproductive Rights. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.